Welcome to the Misadventures in Music podcast. It's me, Mick Ord.
And me, Ian Prowse.
And we've got, again, a very, very special edition today. We're going to talk about the Viper record label, aren't we, Ian?
Yeah.
They've been going since 1999. They're based here in Liverpool. Their catalogue is like no other record label I've ever seen. And we've got one of the co-founders, Paul Hemmings, in. So.
And Paul is somebody I've known of and his fabulous guitar playing in Liverpool for, oh, I hate to say it,
70 years?
35 years now. I first saw him in a place called the Fire Station in Bootle, dreadful venue at the very beginning of the Lars. Paul was playing the guitar and was the best one they ever had, in my opinion.
Well, so thank you very much.
Is the right answer. Right, first of all, we're going to hear a really important song and Paul's going to explain why it's important. It's by Buddy Jones.
That waves on the ocean, waves in the sea, but that gal of mine rolls just right for me. Rock and rollin', mama, I love the way you rock and roll. Ease my troubled mind, pass by my weary soul. My pants are always pressed, shirts are always clean. I know I've got a good gal, so I never treat her mean. Rock and rollin', mama, I love the way you rock and roll. Ease my troubled mind, pass by my weary soul. Pocketbook is full. You can do the same thing if you don't shoot a bull. Rock and rollin', mama, I love the way you rock and roll. Ease my troubled mind, pass by my weary soul. I was born in Alabama, raised in Tennessee. My gal was born in Florida, where the ships roll out to sea. Rock and rollin', mama, I love the way you rock and roll. You ease my troubled mind, pass by my weary soul. Most every night, out till half past three. When she's tired of rocking, she rolls it home to me. Rock and rollin', mama, I love the way you rock and roll. Ease my troubled mind, pass by my weary soul.
Well, that was the first record to mention the term rock and rollin' by Buddy Jones, and he was a Western swing artist, and I think he was really just talking about so someone on board a ship just rocking and rolling, really.
And that was 1940.
That was 1940. It's got a great piano solo in and a great guitar solo. And it's sort of that 12 bar, although I've just been told it's 10 bar. you could feel that something was changing in the music anyway, building up. I mean, if you listen to all this type of stuff, Western swing, rhythm blues, blues, there was this, you could feel this whole development happening and things were going to change. Moving on to Elvis, you know, first rock and roll.
Was he a white guy?
I think he was a white guy. I'm not sure. He sounds white. Western swing, he's got to be white.
Okay,
he's not going to be black in Western swing.
Yeah.
So it's interesting in that respect. And it's just a great record.
Well, welcome to the podcast, Paul. We've both known you for many, many years. And I went on your website a couple of weeks ago and I saw the catalogue you've got. Because you started in 99, didn't you?
We started in 99.
And do you want to? It was you and Mike Badger, wasn't it, originally?
It started in 1999, and it was me and Mike Badger. Yeah, we're both music fans, and I had this idea of a record label when I was on tour with the Lightning Seeds, I think it was probably about 1998, although I'd had it previously, but never got around to doing it. And being in the Lightning Seeds opened a few doors. So rather than just saying it's Paul Hemmings from the Lightning Seeds, and we got a distribution deal. So from that, the first record that we did, which I phoned Mike about, was Mike Badger's Volume album, which was a collection of acoustic songs. And the idea behind that was to make like a happy Leonard Cohen record. And I think we succeeded and people loved it. And then it just sort of, then we did a large record, like all the old demos. And it grew from there because we realized that you couldn't just do Liverpool releases. Being music fans, you need to listen to all different types of music. And one of the things which influenced us was that there was this record. It was a Jukebox Eric's. Don't know if you've ever seen it. It's all the records they had on the jukebox in Eric's, and they produced this album. I can't remember what label it came out. It could have been Probe. Steve Hardstatt did that cover with all the pen and ink monsters and like the Probe bags. So we loved that. And we knew Steve, and Mike loves his rockabilly and old rock and roll, and I like blues and soul and got rhythm of blues. So we started to put these compilations together, and we also realised there were lots of German labels doing it, but what they did is they just put everything on it. It got boring, any old crap they put on it. I think you need to, the most you can listen to is probably 24 tracks of the same type of theme. But you pick the best stuff. And being musicians, and you'll know this, Ian, when you do an album, you think of an album running order. Yeah. So you think of, right, I'll leave with a great track. You take it down, about four.
You leave the listener through
the experience. Yeah, the experience. Yeah. And then you build it back up to the end. Yeah. And that's how we work each album. Not that it makes any difference now, because it's all just downloads. People just
it makes a difference to us, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We still adhere to that. For me, is the greatest art form there's ever been, which is the album,
Yeah, true. Which is dying.
Yeah.
And that Buddy Jones song was the first time that rock and roll had been mentioned.
In a song, yes. It? Yeah. According to us, yes. I think it was.
Now, this is probably unfair, but would anyone in Britain have heard that at the time? Because it's 1940. Presumably it was released on a small label over there.
I reckon it would probably be, like Hank Williams. They were always probably recording small radio shows in,
It probably would have got to Liverpool, wouldn't it? Because there's a lot shipping between Liverpool and New York.
And a lot of service people, American service people, were in this area, weren't they, during the war and after. Burton Wood, Chester, maybe one or two other places, so you never
know. All rocking and rolling to that.
Yeah, indeed.
Hey, Cat, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I just left the Death Studios. Here we are in Harlem. Everybody's here but the police, and they'll be here any minute. It's high time, so catch the song. Here it is. Dreamed about a reefer 5 feet long, a mighty mess, but not too strong. You'll be high, but not for long, if you're a viper. I'm the king of everything. I got to be high before I swing. Let the bells ring, ding dong ding, if you're a viper. Say you know you're high when your throat gets dry. Everything's dandy. Oh, yes, you run down to the candy store. Bust your conch on peppermint candy. Then you know your little brown body's scent. You don't give a darn if you don't pay rent. 'Cause the sky is high, so am I, yes, yes. Yes, I vibe a bit, but I'm gonna vibe a bit on 88 now. Oh, stop it, darling, I didn't know you cared. That's enough now. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Let me dream now. That's a killer. Yes, baby. You better nix out on the sidelines there. My wife's in here tonight. She don't vibe either. You know, get away. Are you kidding? Oh, dear. Say you know you're high. Yes, I know I'm high. Cause everything is fine dandy. Yes, gone down to the candy store. Get me Wrigley's or some peppermint candy. I love it, I love it, I love it. Yes, baby, but my body's saying I ain't worried about no rent. Get away from me, you hussy. Yeah. Hi, so have I. I'm all laid out and relaxed. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
The Reefer Song by Fats Waller.
Every generation thinks they're the first ones to get into the illicit netherworld of drugs and God knows what else. And here we are. Many decades.
This is 1943. I mean, it's pretty explicit what it's about, really. Yeah. Saying when I get high. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't disguise anything. It's just such a great, fantastic recording and got a great atmosphere.
And this is from your release, the ultimate 30s and 40s Reefer Songs.
That just says it all, really.
I mean, 20 songs, 20 tracks on here, and they're all about getting stoned.
Well, of course. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, every musician, it's probably every musician does. Yeah. And it's been going on, you know, for hundreds of years or whenever. And I suppose jazz musicians are associated with drugs quite a lot.
There's no way that wasn't a recording of both the vocal and the piano at the same time. Yeah. You know, there's no overdubs going on there, was there?
It's all around one microphone. Yeah. And you get closer in for
that. And there's a subtext of it, of there's a woman involved, isn't there?
He
appears to be trying to, you know, push away, but I don't know if it's a lady of the night or whatever it is, but it's all mixed in, isn't it?
It's a good story,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's a good story, and it's a very old story.
Yeah,
but as I said, people saying, "Oh, you know, we're the first to try this drug or do that," but it's been going on since time began, really.
True.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is the process by which you spot archive recordings that you want to bring back?
And how do you get past the copyright situation? What's the score with all that?
Well, that's easy because it's 70 years. Anything that's older than 70 years, you can use.
Okay.
It used to be 50 in the UK, but Cliff Richard changed all that.
Oh, okay.
So, but then you got into this ridiculous situation where...
How did Cliff Richard change all
that? Don't you skip over that, Paul.
Don't ask. No, because he was protecting the copyright on his music, so a lot of his stuff was released, you know, his early rock and roll stuff, and he was wanted to, so he could own it for a bit longer.
Ah, okay.
So that's how it got changed. But in a way, it was right to, because remember, we did a lot of these albums before downloads were around, and in a lot of ways, the internet. So what happened was we could actually take Elvis's recordings and release them, but they couldn't in America because it was still 70 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that didn't actually seem that fair. So it's worldwide, it's mostly 70 years. Anything older than 70 years you can release. And theme-wise, I mean, why not? I mean, you might as well. Mike and I used to have got this huge archive, and so it's Steve Hardstaff, of all these records and recordings. And, you know, we're hoarders, and we look through them and we go, right, you can spot a theme.
So you had this, or you had some of these tracks on your album?
Some of these, yeah, some of them have been on albums, and I think a couple of labels had done it before, but they hadn't done it well, we didn't think. So again, you cherry pick the best stuff. And the best songs, the best recordings, and you put it all together. I mean, you start to think of themes, but you can remember the office at the time was around Penny Lane in a bedroom. You don't really realise how far reaching this stuff gets because the distribution goes worldwide, and you're in your own little cocoon. But then you start to go off on tangents because Mike and I did the best chicken album in the world. and I don't know for
what
reason.
Were you suffering from the Reefer album?
Well, it seemed a good idea at the time, and Mojo said it was the best Chicken album. You're going to hear the only one. But it's a great album if you're into chickens.
Okay. You'd had too many of the Reefers off the Reefer album.
The funky chicken on it.
Well, that's another one for later on. Chicken album two.
We'll have a whole podcast.
When you say chicken albums, the song had to mention chicken or
well, of
what?
Course.
Yeah.
Chickens come home to roost, chicken around the moon, yeah. And that's the things I could think of. I mean, the chicken's quite important.
In rock and roll
blues. No, it's true. Blues artists always wanted their Robin to be a chicken because they were starving.
Oh, okay.
So they'd sing something like Pick Old Robin Clean because they wanted it to be like a chicken.
Yeah, okay.
But they could only get a Robin.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So it's sort of quite important. Yes, well, it's a history lesson. So,
well, the next one we've got is by the Reverend Edward Claiborne. And this song is from the very best of American religious songs.
Mother, take the pillow from under my head. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Mother, take the pillow from under my head. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Mother, take the pillow from under my head. Jesus, making up my dying bed. Then you'll need that true religion. Hallelujah. Hush now, mother, don't you cry. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Hush now, mother, don't you cry. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Hush my mother, don't you cry. Since you know I'm born to die, then you'll need that true religion. Hallelujah. Doctor standing around looking sad. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Doctor standing around looking sad. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Doctor standing around looking sad. Hardest case I ever had. Then you need that true religion. Hallelujah. Cross and Jordan, you need not fear. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Cross and Jordan, you need not fear. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Cross and Jordan, you need not fear. Jesus is an engineer. Then you need that true religion. Hallelujah. Jordan River, deep and wide, hallelujah, hallelujah. Jordan River, deep and wide, hallelujah, hallelujah. Jordan River, deep and wide, I have a home on the other side. Then you'll need that true religion, hallelujah. Jordan River, deep and cold, hallelujah. Jordan River, deep and cold, hallelujah, hallelujah. Jordan River, deep and cold, I'm so glad it blessed my soul. Then you'll need that true religion, hallelujah.
This is what going to churches should be all about. It should be about praising the Lord and listening to some great reverend playing some great guitar.
I'd just start to go if it was like this, you know.
I mean, it's supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be sitting there all solemn wearing black, you know. I mean, this was a sermon, you know. He preached like this. He played guitar at the same time. I mean, it's rock and roll before rock and roll. It's rap before rap. I mean, it's got a real rhythm to it. All his sermons were like this. He was quite famous in those circles for preaching like this.
And the song speeds up the pace, doesn't it, halfway through it?
It just gets going, reaches a crescendo.
It's like a trance.
You can hear the plantation in that, because he's going round and round on the same thing, and it is like trance-like. And the chanting on the plantations, which, you know, they would do all day long to keep themselves going.
Yeah.
And you can hear it. There it is.
I mean, it's just such a it's just got such a great style, and I just, like I said, I love the rhythm and the way he just spits it out. It's just cool. It's lovely.
It is, isn't it? I mean, in those days, and what era are you talking?
I think this will be late 20s. There's quite a lot of his recordings out there. I mean, I don't know if you could listen to an album of it, because they're all practically the same, because it's all a sermon, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But in isolation, he did, I think on one of our Christmas albums, we've got one of his Christmas tracks, which is great also. But he's just a unique character, and people have forgotten about him, I suppose, in a way.
Would that have got any airplay? Like, did they have gospel radio stations in the States then? Or was it just, he's recorded a song and the people that can afford it would buy it? Is it that?
That's a difficult question to answer. To be honest, I'm not too sure. It probably might have been, he probably will have gone into a local radio station's record, because there weren't really that many professional recording studio. I'm trying to think when they would be. Would there be
the record player only came out in the 20s, didn't it?
Yeah. So this is 28, something like 29. Yeah. So they could have been sold in church, or they could have been given.
He would have had to cut it, you know, for us to be able to hear it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The only way for it to have been passed down is that it must have been cut onto a record at some point in that decade.
And would that have been recorded in a church, you think, Paul?
Either that, or probably a radio station or a little booth somewhere. I'm not sure. I mean, again, that's probably lost in time.
There was probably one person in the community that had access to, you know, like it was when we were kids, you know, there was only one person who had the tape recorder. You'd all go round there, and it would have been like that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's true.
And it's fabulous that that it's managed to survive and we get to listen to it now.
Yeah.
Because you can hear the past in this music, can't you?
And you can hear the present, as you said.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's rap or whether it's blues, whatever you want to call it now, you can definitely feel the roots there.
There's a history lesson, isn't there?
You
learn things.
I was looking at a photo of him last night as well. And he looked great.
He picked bits of fashion from him.
Yeah, he looked fabulous.
Well, here's another name that some people might know, Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Just talk about her before we play.
I mean, she was quite famous, really, you know, and she was sort of, again, brought up in the church, that spiritual gospel singing, and she, amazing guitar playing. She used to play this sort of 3-pickup SG with golf. I mean, one of those Gibson thing, which of course I love. Yeah. But and she was one of the first to use distortion, like that real raucous guitar in a lot of her records. I mean, again, this is mostly spiritual. But I just, again, she's a sort of predecessor to rock and roll, and it's one of the first to. I think this is 41, 42, Rock Me. It's just, you hear it's a great rock and roll record.
Wash my soul with water from on high. While the world of love is around me, evil thoughts do bind me. But oh, if you leave me, I will die. Help me to do good. hold me in the hollow of thy hand. You hide me in thy bosom till the storms of life is over. Oh, rock me in a cradle of thy dove.
The wonderful Sister Rosetta.
That's singing, Jesus Christ. That's amazing.
And she influenced like a lot of guitarists like Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck and Keith Richards. And of course they loved all this type of, you know, the blues music and everything from America, and brought a lot of these artists over. Well, Alexis Korner did, and various other people. And I think there's a famous clip of her singing at some train station in Manchester in the pouring rain, which I think was near Coronation Street.
Wow.
In 60s, I don't know, people, I'd probably get it wrong, late 60s sometime. But, you know, it was, like I said, it was Alexis. Without these people, there wouldn't be the Rolling Stones and the whole British so explosion.
That sounds to me like a rock and roll record.
Yeah.
But what is it, 10 years before rock and roll exploded meaningful way?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Early 40s, this would have been.
Oh, so maybe even 15 years, really,
yeah,
before.
I mean, they were all influenced by all this blues music, you know, Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. Because that, you know, this chord structure, her singing right at the top of her voice, the lyrics, Rock Me, that's all rock and roll. So yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's as if it's only incubating for another 15 years till the white guys get hold of it, and that makes it acceptable,
yeah,
in a way.
Yeah.
You know, that's the story that goes, isn't it?
It's true. I mean, listening to all this stuff, you can hear it all developing and bubbling under in a lot of these recordings in the 40s, yeah, and then all coming out in you know, with Hank Williams as well, it all coming out in sort of the early 50s. But again, in Britain, there was another story there. I don't know if we listened to a lot of this stuff in the 50s. It was all easy listening. So in a lot of ways, we were behind. But then when people like Alexis Korner and, you know, all the Stones and everyone else got hold of these records, because they loved all these records, yeah, it then changed the music. They were influenced by this blues music, then sold it back to the States.
But they added a lot of their own personality as well, didn't it? You know, which is the essence of great music, is always a hybrid.
I think a lot of these artists were, it's like a lot of these jazz musicians who in America, the era had gone in America, so they moved to Paris.
Yeah, okay.
You know, because they couldn't get any work in America, yeah, something else. So they were treated really well.
But that's interesting, because there's a thing every time I've gone to France and Paris in particular, they love their jazz, don't
absolutely,
they? And yeah, that would be the, you know, the beginnings of that.
I mean, imagine sort of being, you know, jazz musician, then bebop comes along and then rock and roll, and you feel a bit like superseded.
Yeah.
So you get paid, you know, buttons for working in America, whereas you can go to Paris and live in the lap of luxury.
Yeah, yeah, be exalted.
And go down the south of France and play lovely festivals.
I know which I choose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Paris was a hotbed of jazz in the 20s, yes, just after the First World War, wasn't it? It was really rocking then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So this kind of legacy was built up over the interwar years and into the late 40s, wasn't it?
Music knows no borders, does it? And
no,
melodies know no borders.
No.
They cross at will, and they don't take any notice of what nations are doing, or, you know, elites or anything. They'll just, people share and change music all over the world, don't they? You know, that's what makes new.
But without these sort of, you know, Led Zeppelin, and like I said, and hearing this music, so they changed it slightly. You're right, they added something, and then they sold it back to America. They became quite interested in it again. But, you know, you hear those stories of the Stones when they first go to Chess recording studios, and there was Muddy Waters painting the walls, and they're going, well, what are you doing painting the walls in the studio? You know, you're a famous star to us. But he wasn't so much over there at the time.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Madness. Paul, you mentioned Alexis Korner before.
Yes.
And then while we were listening to that track you were saying you saw him in Liverpool years ago when you were a kid.
I saw him in, it must have been the mid-70s, and it was a Sunday night, and all I knew about him was I'd read his name on the back of a Rolling Stones record. You know, we used to devour the back of records.
Yeah.
And his name was mentioned, and he was a big influence on the Stones, because obviously he started the blues scene. So I remember me and mates, we got the bus, green bus into Liverpool, rainy Sunday. God, how they let us into the pub, because we were only, what, 14? But so they let us upstairs in this pub, and we were there hours early, of course, and he sound checked. I remember thinking, who's this bloke with this cigarette lighter and a thing around his neck and this huge hair, you know, like Mungo Jerry, this massive afro.
Wow.
And then the room just filled up all of a sudden with all these stoned hippies. And again, we were only 14. The room's full of smoke, and he smoked, chain smoked.
Yeah.
So I was sitting right underneath him, watching him play, and he was just incredible. I've never seen anything like it. For a wonderful hour and a half, just played, and of course that voice, you know, real
gravelly.
Mesmerising, incredible. Because I think every kid, so it was I'm glad we went.
Where was it again? What was the venue?
You know what? I've got the poster, so I'll dig it out.
Okay.
But it's a little photocopy poster. It was Manx Hotel or something it was.
Oh, right.
Sure it was literally just an upstairs bar.
What was the pub that used to be next to the Empire?
The Legs of Man.
The Legs of Man.
Could have been something. I just used the memories up here, but I could be, you know, lost in time.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
But, you know, for me, that music, you know, when you're growing up, you first get into, I don't know, you listen to your mum and dad's music, although my mum liked, you know, Bad Moon Rising and Little Red Rooster of Stones and Ike and Tina Turner and all this great, and the Beatles. So I was always brought up with that. And then you sort of, first record book was the Rolling Stones. And then you might get into the Sweet or you know, all that type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a bit of heavy rock.
Yeah.
Because I saw
the Jacksons, it was always a good one because they were the cool Osmonds, weren't they?
Yes. And then you sort of, and then I was in that sort of weird sort of electric corner. And then I moved and I was slightly too young for punk rock. So I went to the matinees at Eric's. Right. I couldn't get into the.
Yeah, I wasn't old enough.
I wish I was. Yeah. Mike was a year older. And looked a little bit older, so he could go to the proper show. So he saw the Cramps and various other people. I think I saw XTC one afternoon. Which isn't bad, is it?
No, that's not bad.
I saw the Stranglers when they reopened it as Brady's.
Oh, okay.
Which lasted for about 10 minutes.
Yes,
didn't
it did.
Yeah. Oh, I remember Brady's. The next one is by The Robins.
Yes.
And we won't say the title because loads of people will know this.
On July the 2nd, 1953, I was serving time for armed robbery. At 4 o'clock in the morning, I was sleeping in my cell. I heard a whistle blow, then I heard somebody yell.
There's a riot going on.
The trouble started in cell block number 5 and spread like fire across the prison floor. I said, okay, boys, getting ready to run. Here come the warden with the Tommy gun. Warden said, come out with your hands up in the air. If you don't stop this riot, you all gonna get the chair. Scarface Jones said, it's too late to quit. Pass the dynamite, cause the fuse is lit.
There's a riot going on. There's a riot.
47 hours, the tear gas got our men. We're all back in our cells, but every now and then
there's a riot going on.
What a great rock and roll song.
What a recording, isn't it?
And it's one of the first use of sound effects at the beginning. And of course, it's again, with musicians, they're always getting into trouble, so they're always ending up in prison. So.
And that's Riot in Cell Block Number 9, and that's on your album, Banged Up, American Jailhouse Songs.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, musicians are always, when there's alcohol and God knows what else, and girls, there's always going to be trouble, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's the musician as outlaw thing, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And I think we all feel that as musicians, that you are, your greatest fear as a musician is being ordinary. You know, when you see the ordinary world going by, the 9-to-5 world is more terrifying than anything to you when you're...
Yeah, and I suppose you've got to remember, being black in that era, you're probably going to be locked up
at some point
in your life. You know, it was a sort of, it was quite racist around that era, so...
So that's 1953,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, 53, yeah. And so... Just, I mean, it's rock and roll, really, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it is, isn't it?
I think Elvis, when was Elvis comes, 54?
Yeah, something like that.
Something,
yeah.
So, but it's just a great recording.
Oh, it is. Yeah. And can you imagine sort of trying to rewind yourself to white middle-class America
and listening
in
to
1953
that.
And your kids listening to
yeah.
that?
Yeah, they would have been terrified. This
is, using dynamite.
This is, yeah, yeah.
8 years after the war.
Yeah, we won the war, and this is how these people are repaying us, you know.
It's about being rebellious as well,
of course.
You know,
what Ian said before about each generation thinks that they're the ones who have broken all the taboos and done that. Yeah. I remember saying that. You've probably seen the Martin Scorsese documentary on the Stones, Crossfire Hurricane.
Oh, yeah.
And seeing the films from 63 and 64 from behind the stage.
Yeah.
The Stones performing. Little girls aged 12 and 13.
Yeah.
The seats are all wet.
Yeah.
The bouncers are chucking lads of 13 or 14 physically off the stage.
Yeah.
Jagged there. Couple of years after, with the devil tattooed on his chest.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, if my daughters were going to see that now, I'd be barring the front door.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Yeah, this is writing Cell Block Number 9, 10 years, 15 years before that.
I mean, a lot of these people will have played in, you know, sort of quite rough places, you know, either shacks or you know, halls in, or clubs in the major cities, but they will have been... It's probably somewhere that not God-fearing folk go.
No, that's right. Well, it was just like the Beatles in Hamburg, wasn't it? And here, I imagine.
Yeah.
Fights a lot of the time when people have had too much to drink.
Well, that's
rough as anything.
Lennon famously said, didn't it, Liverpool, you had to walk around with your back to the wall because there was there's always murder going on, you know.
Yeah.
And we can all remember that, what it was like.
Yeah.
You know, even in the 80s, 70s and 80s, it was troublesome.
Yeah, it was.
It was, you know.
But I think when you mix it in with guns, it gets a little bit more dangerous.
Yeah. More likely to get a song out of it as well.
Well, also, this is the height of consumer capitalism is coming in America. So we have these suburbs with fridges, with two garage doors, and televisions that come for the first time. But there's also something missing, isn't there, in this society? There's no soul in it.
No.
So people are searching for that as well. You know, it's just because we've all got great things we can buy and consume, there's something missing, and rock and roll is filling in that gap, I think.
Certainly. And the prison idea, it's a great idea for an album, Paul, because not only is
better
it a great
song...
Better than
chickens.
I couldn't possibly comment.
I'll bring the other one in.
Yeah.
I'll do a whole programme on chickens.
We'll do a whole,
and snakes. I did one on snakes.
Oh, yeah, you did one on snakes.
Okay.
Cheese? No?
Cheese isn't really sort of very rock and roll.
No.
Unless
no.
it's sort of a good smoked cheese, I suppose.
I guess songs like writing Cell Block Number 9 would have affected or would have influenced the likes of Johnny Cash.
I hear the train coming, it's rolling around the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rollin' on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowin', I hang my head and cry. Bet there's rich folks eating in a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming, I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me. From this prison, if that railroad train was mine, I bet I'd move it on a little farther down the line. Far from Folsom Prison, that's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.
Of course, that was the great Johnny Cash, and you couldn't have a prison song without having that on. I mean, that song's got all the elements because it talks about trains and prisons, which
and
is
guns. Probably,
and guns, yeah. which features in most country songs,
yeah.
Or all the great ones anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, it's that great chuggy rhythm. I think
was that easy to use and not have any copyright issues or?
Yeah, again, it was you know,
outside the thing,
okay. Copyright laws, and it had to be included. You know, it's the famous one because I think a couple of years later he went into that same prison and did the live album.
Yes,
which they said it would never sell, the record label.
Well, it's his definitive album, apart from the American one he did when he was dying, basically.
Yeah. And the record company, I think, rejected it, but it sold millions.
Fantastic. Well, groundbreaking doesn't come into it, does it? And that line in there, that famous line of his, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die.
Yeah.
Wow, I mean, if you wrote that now, there'd be all kinds of kicking off.
Yeah.
What was the kick-off then? Maybe there wasn't, maybe it wasn't as...
But also mentioning guns. I mean, you're not going to get that rock and roll song here in Britain, are you?
No,
we
no.
carried a water pistol to watch a man die.
Well, we can't talk about money or cars like it in America.
No.
They'll talk about Cadillacs or, I mean, Springsteen does it all the time, Pontiac, or anything, Trans Ams. We can't talk about Vauxhall Vivas and Cortinas, you know,
no.
Or pennies.
Well, some people do.
Yeah, but it's ironic, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and it's
yes, it is.
We can't say really about money, you know, pounds and pence, whereas in American rock and roll terminology, a dime or a quarter just sounds right.
It sounds much better.
You know?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
I mean, I'm just trying to think, in Liverpool, you know, It's Immaterial did that Driving Away From Home track, which is like a sort of American driving track, you know, singing about the M62 and things, rather than, you know, Route 66.
Yeah.
That's the only example I can think of.
I
can't think of any car ones in...
it just, it doesn't have the same poetry. I mean, it's the same, we've had this conversation before, but it's the same with cities. Liverpool is, and maybe London, are one of the only cities in this entire country where you, people can write songs about in a romantic way, and it works, doesn't it? You know, yeah, like they do in America.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas something about, like, Nottingham or Leeds doesn't quite work in the same way, you know.
Or Skelmersdale.
Or Skelmersdale, no, yeah.
Maybe we should.
Yeah, maybe we should start, yeah.
Another of your albums is called Hot Guitars.
Yeah, we realised again, we found another theme. We just wanted to find tracks which just featured great guitar playing. I think Les Paul's obviously on the thing. But this guy, Johnny Guitar Watson, I mean, he did amazing things before even Jimi Hendrix. And in fact, I think I read later on that he didn't like Jimi Hendrix very much because Jimi Hendrix was nothing to really, because he'd done them all before. But what this recording's good at is you can hear the studio engineer basically turning on and off the reverb on the track when he felt like he just must have gone, oh, I'm off now. You can hear it clearly. But his guitar playing is just, it's messy, but it's precise as well. And he goes off in different tangents, and then he comes back again. I mean, again, I think he continued in the 60s and 70s, and he was one of these musicians who, you know, wore big floppy hats and had gold teeth and chains and big collars, you know, a real super fly guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he continued till, I think, the day he died, really.
Well, this is Space Guitar.
Great track. I mean,
wow,
what can you say about that?
It's great club music. You know, you can imagine being in a club and that kicking off and everybody just loving it.
Yeah.
I'm thinking,
yeah,
where the hell did that come
yeah,
from?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. as you said, it sounds like they're having fun expressing themselves. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just a jam in the studio. You never get that again. No. What the studio engineer was doing, I have no idea.
On the sax and the guitar.
On the just old track. I'll just put this echo on now, take it off. But it adds to it.
What year was that?
I think it's about 53, some early 50s sometime,
that's
I think.
Way so before that's time, way before rock and roll.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I'll have to
it's been a huge education doing this with you, Paul, about, you know, you have those ideas, you read about when rock and roll began with Bill Haley and the film and everybody rioting in the cinema and all those mythological stories you heard. But that was nowhere near the start of rock and roll, was it?
No, but also, Bill Haley looked like your granddad.
He did, yeah.
I mean, how he could look rebellious, I've no idea.
He was white, wasn't
your
he?
Uncle so
he
was, dances he badly
He was the sanitised version of it, wasn't he? You know?
But, but that guy is the real deal.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That is so before its time, that. Yeah. You know, the whole kind of... Yeah. Well, you hesitate to call it an arrangement. It was fantastic.
Yeah,
was
I mean, really. That's probably one of my favourite recordings ever, because of being a guitar player and just being, just like I said...
It's irreverence as well, isn't it, which is,
Yeah, and those tiny little phrases he brings in as if people are shouting to each other,
I'd love to have seen him.
Yeah.
Forget Jimi Hendrix, see the Johnny Guitar Watson.
Yeah.
But Jimmy, I think, probably will have seen him. Or probably maybe known him on those circuits. Yeah. I'm not surmising, but I pretty much would have thought so.
On the Chitlin circuit.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, we've got the final track we're going to play from your immense catalogue, The Ultimate Halloween Party. Oh. And this is Bo Diddley, Bo Meets the Monster.
Sitting in my front room, I heard a loud clang. I run to the window to see what was that. Out in the top of my old apple tree, there was a one of purple people here looking at me. I jumped in my plane and I took to the cloud. I had to go see what the mess was all about. Oh, this mess my mother did not understand. All these funny looking people from another land. Baby, no, I got to go. I said, lock all the windows and bolt all the doors. See how, boy, you ought to see. He was a wiggling and a grinning and a sniggling at me. I jumped in my plane and I made it back home. The purple people eater had my baby and gone.
Of course, course, the great Bo Diddley, with the great Bo Diddley rhythm, which he invented. And I think, you know, this will be the era when they... there was lots of songs about aliens and monsters and all that type of thing. And so I suppose it's a history lesson again with that, you know, Reds Under the Bed. There was all that sort of scary thing going on.
Yeah.
So singing about monsters coming to steal your baby.
Yeah.
And a great way of recording, which I think the way you should do, you just go into the studio, you have a fun, and you know, there's a little bit out of tune, who cares?
Yeah.
No, it is what it is. It's got a great vibe to it.
His singing's amazing.
Yeah. And I think it'll have the original Duchess on guitar, who looked amazing again. Looked sort of like a black version of Poison Ivy from the Cramps.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, a cool beehive haircut. I mean, imagine seeing these people.
Yeah.
Imagine seeing them now in a club.
Yeah.
You know,
no wonder Middle America was scared of them. You know, the conservative America was absolutely. White America was terrified.
And that era was. It was. You know, there was. They were. It was Reds Under the Bend. It was communism. It was everything. They were all sort of frightened of everything.
Yeah. Well, all those, as you say, all those sci-fi movies in the 50s and TV, and in this country, Quatermass, it was feeding into that.
Yeah,
Who's our enemy? Who's our enemy?
I mean, you know, we were talking before, Tommy from Space loves all the...
This is Tommy all over, isn't it?
This is Tommy. You know, he loves all this stuff, and he loves all those cult movies, those, you know, where they've got, I don't know, giant spiders in where they just a spider that's superimposed to pick at them. You know, those sort of bad effects.
It's a fusion of like rockabilly and sci-fi, and it contained an entire world, and Tommy just went in there and he never came back out, did he?
You've got to mix sort of Dracula and Frankenstein in there as well.
Yeah,
it's true though.
It's very, you know, the whole thing that we've done today, it has to be said, is about, it's America, you know, Americana and American influence upon our world. And often, you know, American politics and hegemony gets criticised for the way that America conducts itself. But I always stick my hand up and point out that America's had an immeasurable influence on our lives, and in a very positive way. You know, it gave us... For me, Bruce Springsteen or REM or whatever. But here we are today, we've gone through to the very rudiments of what America has given us culturally and changed our lives for the better.
And people talk about, oh, this is rock and roll, this is country and that. But as do you think that that it's rhythm and blues, really, what we've been listening to?
No.
Or does it matter?
I don't think it really matters. I think it's just that beat. I don't think it really matters. It doesn't matter whether it's blues. I mean, it probably goes back further than that, you know.
Is it any good?
Is the question, isn't it?
You know, it's just got that beat and that groove. And if you like it, you know. And also, a lot of these records, people don't realise, you know, when we can compile them, they do tell a story about what's going on at that time.
Yes.
You know, it's not just a piece of music. You shouldn't overanalyze it, but it does tell, you know, a lot of the titles say, what they're about and what's going on in America at the time.
They are, you know, social and political snapshots, without a shadow of a doubt.
Which is probably what we're missing a bit these days.
Without a shadow of a doubt,
Well, if people want to find... More about the Viper label catalogue, just go onto the website, the Viper label.
And most of it's all there, so just click order what you want. Yeah. Order lots of it.
Well, we definitely want to get you back. There's no question about that. We'd love to get you back to talk about some of the other themes and records you've been involved in and music.
Well, just pick a really bizarre one.
More chickens. Thanks, Paul. That was a brilliant podcast. I really love that.
Thank you. Great to have you in.
Fantastic.